Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
9 to 5. Thank you so much for listening. It is The Drive. My name is Carrington Harrison. To my right is the sports machine, Sean Levine. Producing this thing is Brandon Kiley. We are probably going to start Patriots week a little bit earlier than we typically would a normal opponent. But let's be honest, this is not a normal game and you're not playing a normal opponent. So tomorrow we'll probably start the deep dive into the New England Patriots. Not really much to talk about for multiple days when you beat the Oakland Raiders 40-9 and Oakland looks done. Oakland looks like a team that is going to be 8-8 and picking 14th in the NFL draft. I don't think we need two shows to really break down what we saw yesterday. But we do need one more hour, BK. Let's get to the top stories of the day in Kansas City.
Okay, now, from the beginning.
And now, the moment you've all been waiting for.
Check it out.
The top stories of the day, every day at 5 o'clock. The hits.
Cue it up.
One.
Hit number one is that the Chiefs basically put an end to the AFC West race yesterday with a win against the Raiders. They now have what is effectively a three-game lead over Oakland with just four games to play. Here's how it basically breaks down. The Chiefs can clinch the division next Sunday if they beat the Patriots and the Raiders lose to the Titans. Here's what that would mean. The Chiefs won the division title four times between 95 and 2015, a 20-year span. This, if they are able to pull it off, and we would certainly expect they would do so, would be the fourth straight year that the Chiefs have won the AFC West under Andy Reid. C-Dot, I know this season was not about winning the AFC West. There are certainly larger goals to be had. But how big of an accomplishment is this for what Andy Reid has been able to do here in Kansas City?
It's a huge accomplishment from the standpoint of it just goes to show the dominance. I think the Chiefs have the two biggest advantages in the division. I think the biggest advantage is Andy Reid. As great as Patrick Mahomes is, they were doing this with Alex Smith, the quarterback. They were dominating the Chargers, Broncos, and Raiders, even with a different quarterback. So I think he's the biggest advantage. Second is the quarterback. They've gotten better quarterback play than these other teams in the division as well. It certainly is a great accomplishment. But you're right. I'm not that concerned about it because this season was never about winning the AFC West and being better than these teams. It was about, can you be better than Baltimore? Can you be better than Houston? Can you be better than New England? We certainly have an opportunity to find that out on Sunday when this team plays a very critical game against the New England Patriots.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly a big accomplishment. This team has bigger goals ahead. We talked about heading into the season, it was Super Bowl or bust, so winning the AFC West is kind of poo-pooed, but Marty Schottenheimer couldn't do it back-to-back times. Dick Vermeil couldn't do it back-to-back times, and Andy Reid has gone back-to-back-to-back-to-back, so it's certainly an accomplishment. Yeah, the AFC West is over. The question is the two seed still in play? I think it is. I know. It took me a while to come around. You guys told me New England was sucked and they were dead and Tom Brady was old. Now I believe you based on what I saw yesterday.
I don't think New England's losing two home games in a row, and that's basically what would have to happen in order for the two seed to be in play. So the Patriots only have two games remaining. They play Kansas City and Buffalo at home. Their other games are against the Dolphins and the Bengals. Let's be honest. They're not losing either one of those games. So, it means basically you think they're going to lose both of these games. You think they're losing on Sunday to the Chiefs, and then you think they're losing to Buffalo. I don't think they're losing both of those games at home. One, possibly. I don't think they're losing both. I think New England's going 13-3 this season, which if they go 13-3, that means the Chiefs are not getting a two seed.
Right, but technically, I mean, Baltimore could slip up a couple of times. I don't think they're going to. Then you have that tiebreaker. I think that there's a good chance New England actually does lose those games. I mean, would anybody be that surprised? I think the Kansas City should be favored against New England this Sunday. I don't know why they aren't. And Buffalo is actually a pretty good football team. Believe it or not, Buffalo controls their own fate in the AFC East right now, which is something we haven't said in a long time, which would mean that New England would be a wild card team, which is a whole other conversation.
I'm just saying, if you want to have the conversation.
I think it's still alive.
I know. I'm saying, if you want to have the conversation about the Chiefs' domination in the AFC West, you got to have the same conversation about the Patriots and all those other teams in the AFC East. They got a December game at home against Buffalo. Yeah, I don't know how the Patriots are going to be playing. I feel pretty confident I'm taking New England in that matchup.
In the past, yeah. Every other year of Tom Brady's career, sure. We agree. This year's different, and Buffalo's better. Like, I wouldn't be that surprised if the Chiefs win out, which would mean beating New England, and New England loses two more games, and the Chiefs end up with that two seed. I don't think it's going to happen. I'm saying like 20%. But I'm saying there's a chance.
I want to talk about this after the hits. I feel like Sunday's game against Houston is like Kevin McAllister when he went outside and says, I'm not afraid anymore. Because just last Monday, you were terrified about New England, and you were trying to tell BK and I to slow down.
All I know is that's your second Home Alone reference. You already brought up the Wet Bandits, and I'm proud of you.
I feel like you aren't afraid of the Patriots anymore. I feel like something happened on Sunday Night Football, and you seeing them lose handily to the Ravens and the Texans, you're no longer afraid of the New England Patriots. That you were with BK and I. You're off.
Beat a good football team. Like, at some point, the Chiefs have beat good football teams. They've beat the Ravens. They've beat the Vikings. What good football team, save Buffalo a month ago, they won that game by a touchdown, has New England beat? Every time they play a good team, the good team beats them.
Two.
And that's what's going to happen Sunday, too.
Okay.
Damn it.
All right. How confident you are about the Chiefs makes me not as confident about the Chiefs. I will say that. Like, I don't feel as confident about them now that you're so confident about them. Like, I can't wait till Friday when you got the Chiefs blowing the Patriots out.
That's, yeah.
You're going to talk yourself into it. 100%. You're going to talk yourself into 40-21 against
the Patriots. Did I tell you going to put the beatdown on the Raiders? You said the game was going to be a little closer. You'd take the points. I told you it'd be a beatdown, and it was.
Are we putting the Patriots?
No, we're not.
I'm just saying, I said the Patriots. He was like, didn't I tell you they were going to do that to the Raiders? Okay.
On a serious note, though, why are the Chiefs underdogs?
Because, we'll get into that here in a little bit. Okay, hit number two. The defense.
Because they're playing at New England. That's why. You know the answer to this. Don't ask questions you know the answer to.
Who would you put your money on?
The Chiefs. But I understand why they're favorites in the game. I'm not asking why.
Okay.
I'm not asking why the public thinks that New England's going to win the game. It makes sense why the public thinks New England's going to win
the
game.
It's 3 right now by kickoff. Mark my words. Mark the tape. The line will be 1. Everybody's going to be betting on the Chiefs.
Okay.
And number two, the defense starting to look like a strength as opposed to a weakness. Their defense has allowed less than 260 passing yards in 5 of their last 6 games. They have 8 takeaways in their last 3 games in particular. Tyrann Mathieu told the NFL Network after the game that things are finally starting to click for him.
Well, I think the mindset defensively is to really play our best ball from here going forward. We haven't really put together our best performances, this season. But nobody will remember that if we show up in December, January, and play this kind of defense. So really proud of our staff, Coach Spaz, Coach Merritt, Coach House, and obviously our players for really, really committing to the challenge.
C-Dot, are you buying into the Chiefs' defensive improvement in recent weeks?
I am buying into the improvement. I do think that their weaknesses are very apparent. I don't know if they're going to be able to fix them. But I think if we're looking at the schedule and you want to play a what games were the Chiefs' defense a positive or a negative, I think we're going to find the Chiefs' defense has been a positive in more games than it's been a negative. Now, can they beat teams that are power running teams? Can they beat teams that have good quarterbacks? That's a different question. But I think we have a good understanding of what the Chiefs' defense is equipped to stop. And teams like Oakland, and dare I say teams like New England, those aren't the teams that typically give this defense a lot of trouble.
It's easy to say forget about the fourth quarter versus the Titans because Derrick Henry ran a roughshod over the Chiefs in that fourth quarter.
He did.
But if you can do that for just a second and go back to the Vikings game and the first 3 quarters of the Tennessee game and the Chargers game we saw yesterday versus Oakland, like at some point when you start stacking up those type of performances on the defensive side of the ball, it's not an aberration. It's not the exception to the rule. It is what you are. And the Chiefs' defense, especially the secondary, is good. I know that's something heading into the season that nobody thought we were going to say. We thought we were going to be talking about them being the reason why they lost games or couldn't go to the Super Bowl like we did last year. That's not the case. Like, the Chiefs' defense is coming around. We got a quarter of the season left. I'll admit, they're better than I thought they were going to be at any point this year. Tyrann Mathieu's clearly become the leader on that side of the ball. Chris Jones was great again yesterday. And this defense is looking like they can actually win you football games. Last year, maybe you could point to the Jaguars game and say the defense won that game. This year, the first game versus Oakland, yesterday, the Lions game, like there have been 4, 5, 6 games this year that the defense, yes, he said the defense is the reason why the Chiefs won the game.
Three.
I'll get to it later. Don't worry.
Final hit of the day is that Mizzou is officially starting its coaching search. They fired Barry Odom over the weekend. Mike Norvell was one of the top candidates that we heard about immediately, but apparently he's no longer a candidate for Mizzou. Some new names have emerged, and that does include former Tennessee and USC coach Lane Kiffin. Here was Gabe DeArmond of Power Mizzou on with us earlier today.
It would get people in the seats. Now, I think Kiffin is actually a better coach than he's gotten credit for. 3 years at Florida Atlantic, he's 25-13. He's won 2 division titles in the USA. At Tennessee and USC, he won over 60% of his games. Now, Tennessee, he was 7-6, and at the time, that's a disappointment, right, in 2009. Well, there aren't a lot of people that have done better than that since then.
C-Dot, it sounds crazy on the surface, but are you in favor of a potential Lane Kiffin hire at Mizzou?
This is a very difficult thing for me. I'm in favor of Lane Kiffin because of my profession. I'm not in favor of Lane Kiffin as a fan. If Lane Kiffin was the coach of Missouri, it would be wildly entertaining. Like, it would be great if he was the coach of Missouri. I just don't know how much they would win. I really want Brian Harsin. If you're unfamiliar with who he is the head coach at Boise State. I think he would be the perfect hire for Missouri, and I don't know if you hire a Boise State coach that's a home run hire, but I think he is the perfect kind of coach for what they need. You're always going to have to do more with less at Missouri. We saw Pinkel do that. We saw Pinkel have the ability to take 2- and 3-star kids and turn them into kids that could go to the NFL and be productive players. That's the same thing that you're going to have to do with the SEC, maybe at a bigger level, because you're playing against, in theory, more elite competition. I think if there's any program over the last 20 years that has done that, it's been Boise State. So to get a piece of that, I think would be worthwhile. That's where I would go if I was Mizzou.
You know what Lane Kiffin's really good at? Getting jobs, being employable, and getting good jobs, big-time jobs. Head coach at Tennessee, Raiders head coach, USC, Alabama offensive coordinator, now at FAU. Obviously, I think he'd look good for the Missouri job. The problem with the Missouri job is this. Arkansas is looking for a head coach. Ole Miss is looking for a head coach. Like, there's a lot of teams out there that are kind of in that same vein or better. Like, there's Florida State's going to be looking for a coach. USC might be looking for a coach. So, there's going to be some names out there, either retreads, big names, maybe NFL coaches like Herm Edwards taking a dab at the college level. My question is, if the coach that we're talking about has a choice between, let's say, Arkansas and MU or one of these other schools and MU, would they choose the Tigers? Yeah. I think Lane Kiffin would.
But I also think you got to get in where you fit in. If the USC head coaching job is open, they're looking for two completely different kind of coaches.
Sure.
Like, I think USC is only opening that job if they're 100% certain that Urban Meyer is going to take it. I don't think it's going to be a real coaching search. I think it's either he's going to take it or James Franklin's going to take it from Penn State. So I hear what you're saying. I do think that Florida State's obviously a better job. USC, if they become open, obviously a better job. I think Washington's a better job for Missouri. But I think there's pros and cons with Missouri, Ole Miss, and Arkansas. That Arkansas does some things better than Missouri. Like, I think their athletic department's a lot stronger, but they're also in the West. Ole Miss, they don't really have a lot of track record, and they're also in the West. Missouri, I mean, they were 2 wins away from winning 8 games this year. I know you say 2 games. Every team's like that. Man, if they just beat Vanderbilt, who was the worst team in the SEC this year other than Arkansas, or if they win the game against Wyoming, they win 8 games and we're not even having this conversation about them firing their coach. They're not that far off from being where I think Missouri is. Missouri every year should be between 7 and 9 wins. That's realistic to expect from Missouri. And then every 4 or 5 years, you got a chance to do what Missouri should have done this year and win 9 or 10 games.
Barry Odom found out the hard way that it's awful difficult to follow the guy. And Gary Pinkel was the guy. You want to be the guy that follows the guy that followed the guy. And that's what makes it more impressive what Chris Wyman has been able to do out there at K-State, where he clearly followed the guy. And he's had the ultimate success. MU needs to find their version of that guy.
Yeah, I don't think that was the problem with him. They lost to Wyoming.
Climbing, by the way.
They lost to Wyoming in year 4. And they lost to Vanderbilt on the road in year 4. That ain't have nothing to do with replacing Gary Pinkel. Barry Odom just wasn't that good. So you have been talking to us about Darwin Thompson. BK, how long would you say that he's been talking to us about Darwin Thompson?
Since April 17th-ish?
It didn't really start when they drafted him, though. It was like week 2 or week 3 of the preseason. You have been all in on Darwin Thompson. And the Chiefs, for whatever reason, never really gave Darwin Thompson an opportunity. But you know what? Football happened. You know I say it always does. Damian Williams was out yesterday, so they made Darwin Thompson active. Darrell Williams got a non-contact injury. It seemed like it could be serious. I don't think that Darrell Williams is going to play in their game on Sunday against the Patriots. And then they put Darwin Thompson in there. He got 11 carries, and you know what? He didn't look that bad in those 11 carries. Here's what Andy Reid had to say about it.
Yeah, no, he did a nice job. He had productive runs today. And, I mean, we're not fooling anybody here. I mean, he's not getting any younger. So it's my responsibility to manage him the best I can. And I think I know him as well as anybody. So I'm going to do what I think is right on that. And if it's wrong, then it's my fault, right? So I'll take that on my shoulders there. But I know he wants to play every play. And he loves to play. But I've also got to trust what I do on that part.
I'm just happy that we've got to the point that we finally can answer the question, because you've been clamoring for Darwin Thompson. The text line has been clamoring for Darwin Thompson. The poll voters on Arrowhead Pride have been clamoring for Darwin Thompson. This is the opportunity. Football normally provides these kind of shots where a guy goes down, a guy gets injured, and then you are the next man up. He was given an opportunity in the fourth quarter against Oakland. Say what you want about garbage time. He got in there, and he made the most of the opportunity given the situation. With the up-and-down nature of LeSean McCoy, I don't know if Damian Williams is going to play. I don't think Darrell Williams is going to play. And the only other running back on their roster is Elijah McGuire. Now, maybe they bring somebody in tomorrow for a workout and they sign somebody like a Charkandrick West, CJ Anderson situation that happened last year whenever they released Kareem Hunt. But the expectation is Darwin Thompson is going to be involved in the offense and finally get an opportunity. Can he make the most of it? We'll see.
About time. I'm trying to tell you, it's the theory of natural selection, and Darwin is the answer, at least right now. It's not Darrell. It's not Damian. Those guys are hurt. It's not LeSean McCoy. He's clearly somewhat still in the doghouse. And to me, and I know what you're going to say, it was a last drive against an Oakland team that had already gave up. I get that. But the most impressive thing to me is that I didn't know the Chiefs were capable of what I saw yesterday in the fourth quarter, where they could run 10 minutes off the clock by handing the ball off to a running back, have success, and end up in the end zone. And that's what they did that last drive. Not to mention, there are running backs. Like, there's a lot of qualities you want from your running back. A guy that can cut, a guy that has speed, a guy that has vision. You know what else you want? A guy that's fresh. And Darwin Thompson right now is fresh. I think he's going to get an opportunity versus New England. And if he shows out versus New England, then we're talking about, what, two games left, three games left? And then we're talking about the playoffs. If he shows out versus New England, there's a chance he becomes the guy the rest of the way.
I don't know if he's going to be the guy just based on his size and lack of experience. I still think in a playoff game, they probably side with LeSean McCoy. But no one has taken full advantage of the number one running back role. No one's taken advantage of the number two running back role. I think at the very beginning of the season, the plan was for it to be a 1A, 1B situation between LeSean McCoy and Damian Williams.
Yeah.
And neither one of them have emerged as good options. So if anything, if Darwin Thompson plays well on Sunday against the Patriots, it is mandatory that he has to be a part of the offense going forward. At that point, what options do you have? Damian's been battling injuries and ineffectiveness all season. Darrell Williams hasn't done much with the opportunity that you've given him either. You don't trust LeSean McCoy to hold on to the ball consistently, so I don't even care if it's the guy. But they got to find somebody who can be productive, because I think our biggest argument, disagreement when it comes to running the football is, you seem really concerned with how many times they run the football. I'm concerned with how effective they are running the football. In the game on Sunday against the Raiders, they ran the ball 22 times with their running backs and got 67 yards. That ain't good enough. Patrick Mahomes ran for more yards than Darrell Williams and LeSean McCoy combined. They got to find one or two guys or some combination to run the ball consistently and get production from that position. So I don't care if it's Damian. I don't care if it's Darrell. I don't care if it's LeSean McCoy. I don't care if it's Darwin Thompson. But it's playoff time. It's December. You're playing on the road against the Patriots. You still got a chance to be the 3 seed or the 2 seed, depending on what happens here. It's go time to find out what your plan is running the football, and can you do it effectively?
And they did yesterday, at least in trying. And I keep telling you, that's what you got to do. Yesterday, they had a perfect run-pass split. And it doesn't have to be that way, exactly 50-50, like it was yesterday. The head-scratching thing is they weren't good at either one of those things. You keep pointing out the rushing numbers. You're right. They weren't good. They averaged 3-point-something yards per carry.
They haven't been good at running the ball.
That is nothing to brag about. BK's pointed out the last couple of hours, the Pat was really average, bad, compared to what we've gotten used to with Patrick Mahomes yesterday in his 29 passing attempts. So we agree. The split was good. They tried. They did the right thing, right? 29 passing attempts, not great. 29 rushing attempts, not great. You know what was? You know that's all that matters? The final score. Sometimes when you're balanced, you win games. And that's what happened yesterday. You can't really point to anything except for the defense and special teams and say that's where the Chiefs were great yesterday, except for the final score.
I would say those are two major things. They scored on special teams and their defense got a pick six yesterday. So I hear what you're saying. Aside from the defense, their defense probably gave you – now, I understand it wasn't the game against the Minnesota Vikings. Certainly not the kind of talent, but – that was a great performance yesterday. I thought they mentally broke the will of Derek Carr and the Raiders. You can even hear it in some of the player audio. I think the players on the Raiders said it. After that pick six, I don't think the Raiders wanted any part of that game. I think they realized that it wasn't their kind of day.
Speaking of that, you know who gets a star yesterday? Brett Veach. I mean, Juan Thornhill was awesome. Darwin Thompson got a shot. And even though he didn't put up any numbers yesterday, Mecole Hardman has been much better than expected. I tried to tell you this year. Like, if you want to talk about Brett Veach's draft class, his first chance, which netted absolutely nothing, and going forward, there's not really one guy you can point to and say, yeah, I think one day he's going to be good. This draft class has been a 180 difference. You can even throw Colin Saunders in there. Like, guys have played, guys have been effective, and yesterday, Juan Thornhill and Darwin Thompson were a couple of the best players on the field.
BK, I want to bring you in on this because you were really high on Thornhill at the very beginning of the season. I would imagine that's close to the vision that you had when you thought about him. Now, I don't know if you can expect that every week. I mean, he played at a – Like he could win an award this year for Defensive Player of the Week. That's how good he was, I thought, on Sunday against the Raiders. I don't think we've seen that kind of impact from a defensive player probably since Marcus Peters. Like, Juan Thornhill did a little bit of everything. He had that big tackle for loss when Oakland went for it late in the ball game or early in the ball game. He had the pick six. He was flying all around the field and making plays. I thought that was one of the best rookie efforts we've seen from a Chiefs player in a very, very long time.
Yeah, Thornhill's really starting to come around. He looks like the player that I expected it to. He's been good all year long, but the difference is he wasn't making those splash plays early in the season. The last few weeks, we've seen a few more of them. This week, he had the tackle for loss that ultimately resulted in a fourth down stop. He had the interception that we've talked all about today with the pick six. He was tremendous yesterday. And if that's the kind of player that he's going to be, and let's be honest, it's at least on the table that more of that is in his future, this secondary has suddenly become a strength for the team. Because Charvarius Ward is just flat out good at this point. Not great, but he's a good corner. Tyrann Mathieu, it appears, is starting to find his place within this defense as well, especially with what we've seen from the splash plays from him over the last few weeks. And their number two cornerback, whether it's Bashaud Breeland or Mo Claiborne, it seems like both of them are solid. This week, I don't know if you guys noticed it, but Rashad Fenton was actually playing over Kendall Fuller for most of the game. And then Kendall Fuller ended up getting a lot of the late reps because Fenton got hurt, but they have a deep and talented secondary all of a sudden, and I can't believe that I'm saying that here on December 2nd.
I think that's the best safety effort we've seen from the Chiefs probably since Eric Berry's game against the Atlanta Falcons, like where the safety really jumped off on the field. I'm not saying that Tyrann Mathieu hasn't played well this season, but if you want to talk about the safety maybe being the best player on the field, Juan Thornhill might have been the best player on the Chiefs yesterday. Better than Kelce, better than Hill, better than Mahomes, better than Chris Jones, better than Frank Clark. Juan Thornhill was special yesterday. I don't think we've seen that kind of defensive effort from any player, probably since Eric Berry against the Falcons. Now, I'm not saying he won the game yesterday. Believe me, Derek Carr did a lot to lose the game, and other guys on the team played well. You got to play well to win 40-9. But the effort that he gave yesterday was special.
That Eric Warfield Award that you created a couple of years ago, remind me, who are some of the past winners of the Eric Warfield Award?
Kendrick Lewis, Sean Smith. I mean, it's been a lot of winners of the Eric Warfield
Award. I don't think you're going to be able to give it out this year.
I don't think so either.
That's an award that goes out to the worst member of the Chiefs secondary. I mean, who would that go to?
Scandrick got it last year.
Ben Neiman.
Kendall Fuller? Like, I don't know who that goes to. It's not going to Fenton. It's not going to Ward. It's not going to Breeland. Not going to Mathieu. Not going to Claiborne. Like, as BK said, especially compared to what we thought they were going to be. Because sometimes when it comes to Patrick Mahomes, we fall victim to, well, he's not as great as he was last year, so he's not the best. Well, remember, last year he had a very special season. I think that's a problem we run into sometimes is we want to compare this team to teams of yesteryear, and sometimes that doesn't make sense.
I think the secondary has been better than their wide receiver core.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I mean, which I never would have guessed.
Who thought you were
going to say that? I never would have guessed. Like, I said coming into the season, I thought they had one of the five worst secondaries in the NFL. Coming in at wide receiver, Mecole Hardman, Tyreek Hill, Sammy Watkins,
who?
DeMarcus Robinson. Like, I thought that they, in theory, could have had one of the five best wide receiver cores. Only one wide receiver got a catch yesterday, and that was Tyreek Hill. Mecole Hardman's been very inconsistent. DeMarcus Robinson's been almost non-existent since those two games early in the season. They haven't gotten consistent effort from their wide receiver core. Say whatever you want about the corners, and I've been really critical of their cornerback situation. Their cornerback group has been consistent. They haven't gotten torched by any single quarterback. They haven't got torched by one wide receiver. We can't point to, remember a couple years ago when they were like, Robbie Anderson cooked this team, Amari Cooper cooked this team. There's not been a wide receiver who has dominated this secondary the entire year. And looking at their schedule down the stretch, there's no reason to think so. There's no reason to think that Edelman's catching for 150 against this team. There's no reason to think that Mitch Trubisky's going to throw all over this team. Like, you're at the point where we've seen 13 games, 13 weeks, 12 games from this team. Their secondary is one of the strengths of this team.
Are you sure you don't want to reconsider that statement? Because Sammy Watkins has been pretty good the last couple of months.
No, he has not been. He's been awful.
Zero touchdowns in the last 100 days. Yesterday, he was on the field, right?
He played.
Three targets, zero catches. Hit us up on the Protein House Eat with the Purpose text line, 69306. Not just in the history of the Chiefs or the NFL, but sports. Has there been a more overpaid and less productive player than Sammy Watkins? I can't think of one.
I just don't get it with Sammy Watkins.
What don't you get?
I was thinking
this. He stinks.
No, I'm not that part.
He's garbage. He's trash.
I was thinking this.
Overpaid.
Some people listening, their favorite sports moment, like individual sports moment, was Alex Gordon hitting a home run in game one of the World Series.
Loved
it. Like your favorite sports moment. For a time, before Patrick Mahomes took over Kansas City, some of you guys' favorite player was Eric Berry. Kansas City was more critical of those two people than they've been of Sammy Watkins. I have seen a coddling around Sammy Watkins and his contract unlike anything I've ever seen before in my entire life. I've never seen a city so afraid to criticize a player who's not a hashtag forever royal or not really a part of Chiefs Kingdom, doesn't have any memories the way we treat Sammy Watkins. Like, Sammy Watkins is in a special class of people that we just don't criticize. That's like Dayton Moore. Like, you can't come on here and say anything bad about Dayton Moore. Bill Self's in there. Bill Snyder's in there. Like, there's like a special wing of people that just are a void criticism in Kansas City.
And all those aforementioned guys earned it, for sure. Bill Snyder, Dayton Moore, Bill Self. Those guys have earned, if you don't have a great year, a great game, to not get the smack talk on you. What has Sammy done to deserve that?
He plays with Patrick Mahomes. That's literally the only thing I can think of. I'm serious. Every time we talk about Sammy Watkins and BK, you see me on Twitter. Anytime I mention Sammy Watkins, stop talking about it. Stop beating a dead horse. Like, it's like people accepted that the contract was bad from the very beginning, and they've just blocked it out of their mind. Like, they've just said, we understand that it's bad. Don't talk about it. Don't talk about it. We don't want to hear about it. Sammy Watkins is the highest paid player on the team. I looked this up. There are only four players in the NFL who have a higher cap hit than Sammy Watkins who don't play quarterback in the NFL. And I'm talking Von Miller, Khalil Mack, Aaron Donald. They have gotten nothing from Sammy Watkins this year after week one.
Think about how different those players you just mentioned, their team would be week in, week out without those guys. They've got no chance. Think about how different this team is with or without Sammy Watkins, healthy, injured, whatever. He has no impact on this team winning or losing football games. None whatsoever. Period.
First team all ski mask. He has been an absolute criminal. He stole money from the Kansas City Chiefs. I mean, absolutely stole money.
He robbed the bank, and then he went back to the same Bank of America and robbed them again.
I mean, this is some Ocean's 8 kind of stuff what he's done. This is Ocean's 11, what he's done. Like, it's hard to steal that much money and not have a gun. Like, it's hard to walk away with that much money and not have a pistol. That's what Sammy Watkins has done. He has embezzled from the Kansas City Chiefs. Embezzled. He should be charged. That's what he's done. He has been an absolute criminal. Since week one, when you guys were, oh, see, Carrington, we told you. He has 300 yards since week one. 300 yards.
And
the
zero
last 11
touchdowns.
Games.
Zero touchdowns.
Been an absolute criminal.
In 100 days. He's got as many touchdowns as BK in the last 100 days.
Been a criminal. He gets paid twice as much as Travis Kelce. Just an absolute criminal. Coming up on the other side, we'll go inside the mind of the machine, and let's talk about the defense. Do you believe in this defense? We'll talk about it coming up. It's
The Drive. The Drive. 610 Sports Radio.
Coming up in about 10 minutes, we will go inside the mind of the machine. I want to play for you guys. We had Scott Goldbranson on the show. He does the pre- and post-game for the Oakland Raiders in Las Vegas as they transition to move. We asked him about Derek Carr's struggles against the Kansas City Chiefs.
0-6 in his career there. He's got 4 touchdowns, 7 interceptions. And let's face it, you have to win a game in Arrowhead now and then. Now, the Raiders, as you know, have only won one game there out of the last 13. But with Derek Carr at the helm, he continues to have trouble not only with the weather but with the Chiefs in general. And yesterday, it wasn't like it was against the Jets, where he actually didn't have a terrible game and he had his receivers drop passes. Yesterday, he turned the ball over twice, resulting in 14 points, including that second quarter pick six, which even his teammates yesterday in the post game said, hey, listen, that really deflated us. That kind of took the morale away from this team when that pick six happened.
If you want to find the number one reason on why the Chiefs have been so dominant against the Oakland Raiders, it's been the way that they've defended Derek Carr. Now, I'm not pro Derek Carr. I also think that he's probably a little bit better than people give him credit for and what they're paying him. You're getting exactly what you expect from the position. They're paying him $19 million a year. They've got through the significant part of his signing bonus. Like, Derek Carr at this point, we've seen enough football to kind of know what kind of quarterback that he is. He didn't give you a chance yesterday. It felt very similar to last year's game against Jacksonville when they went up against Blake Bortles, that the quarterback just – you can't win on the road against any team in the NFL. Not Kansas City, not Miami. We saw that yesterday with the way the Dolphins beat the Eagles yesterday. You can't have that kind of quarterback play and expect to go on the road and beat anybody. And Carr was so bad yesterday that simply just didn't give Oakland a chance. And Oakland went from having a chance to be a wild card team just two games ago to now they play Tennessee this week at home, maybe the hottest team in the NFL this side of Baltimore. Oakland's going to finish 8-8, which is a step forward. But if things had broke a little bit differently, they could have put themselves in the wild card picture.
Yeah, speaking of broke, that car is broke. He's horrible. Flat tire, needs an oil change, no timing belt. Like, that's a broke car. But that's been a problem with Chiefs facing all these division quarterbacks. I mean, as bad as Derek Carr was yesterday, was he worse than Joe Flacco with the Broncos a couple of months ago? The game Pat got hurt? I don't know. Was he worse than Phillip Rivers last week?
They were all the same. They all don't give you a chance. Like, Rivers had the 5 interceptions. Flacco was terrible in the game. I hear what you're saying. I mean, Flacco was probably the worst out of those. But, I mean, they've done a really good job in their last 3 divisional games of not just making their quarterbacks play poorly. Like, I don't think that Lamar Jackson was great on Sunday, but did enough to win, and that's about where he's at. Like, you got bottom 5 quarterback play, and you forced turnovers. You didn't commit penalties yesterday, and you were plus on special teams. Like, you're not going to beat any team in the NFL, and certainly not the Chiefs, if you commit the amount of mistakes and penalties that Oakland did yesterday.
How many different quarterbacks, though, C-Dot, do we need to talk about before we say maybe it's actually the Chiefs' defense? And I get it. Joe Flacco's a statue, and Phillip Rivers about to retire, and Derek Carr sucks, and Kirk Cousins isn't that good. But the last month and a half, 2 months, really, if you save – that fourth quarter where Derrick Henry absolutely destroyed the Chiefs. The Chiefs' defense has clearly turned a corner, and now that we've got a quarter of the season left, I'm ready to say that they're better right now than I thought they were going to be at any point this season. Like, it took a while to come around. After the first month, I thought, uh-oh, this looks a lot like Bob Sutton defense, except there's different issues. And clearly, something has changed. They've turned a corner to the point where, do I think the defense is going to be the reason why they win playoff games? Probably not, but do I think it's going to be the thing that cost them a playoff game like it did last year versus New England? Also, probably not.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm at that point. I think we've seen enough of this defense to know what they do well and what they struggle with. How confident would you feel if they play Houston on the road and their ability to stop the run? Like, I would be really worried about that scenario. How about in the wild card game? Let's say they play Buffalo or Tennessee. How confident are you in their ability to stop the run? I think at this point, we know what the Chiefs' defense is and what it's not, and we know the kind of offenses that tend to give the Chiefs' defense a lot of problems. I don't think Oakland's that kind of team. I think Buffalo's one of those kind of teams. I think that Tennessee's one of those kind of teams that just their strengths just seem to perfectly coincide with the Chiefs' defense's weakness.
Serious question. Why are the Chiefs underdogs against New England? Like, I get it. They're New England. They're the Super Bowl champions. They have the greatest quarterback of all time and the greatest coach. Does that matter? Like, aren't the Chiefs playing better right now? Aren't they the more confident team? Aren't they the team with the better offense and the better quarterback? Like, I saw the line come out. Right now, the Patriots are about a 3-point favorite. I think that's going to go down. I think a lot of people are going to bet the Chiefs. I really don't understand why New England is favored to beat the Chiefs.
I think you're looking at it through a Chiefs perspective.
I'm sure I am.
I'm just here to tell you, if the Patriots were underdogs at home, people would run to the book to bet the New England Patriots for them being an underdog at home. I wouldn't pick any team in the NFL to be a favorite, and that includes Baltimore. I don't think Baltimore would be a favorite. Now, I think it would be like almost a pick 'em, Patriots minus one, Patriots minus 1.5. But you know why. You follow the gambling lines enough to know why New England is the 3-point favorite.
But that's Vegas isn't in the business of losing money. And I think the Chiefs are going to win this game. And I think a lot of the public who watches football, not just Chiefs fans or Patriots fans or huge NFL fans, just your common football fan, can see the trajectory. If the Chiefs were a stock, you'd want your money in them. If the Patriots are a stock, you'd want to sell them. That's why I'm surprised, because something tells me the Chiefs are going to win this football game. I hear what you're saying. History is an indicator where the game's being played. Tom Brady's the best of all time.
That
stuff
matters.
Talking about the here and now, though, if we're talking about the here and now, the Chiefs are a better football team than the Patriots.
BK, money-wise, how do you think the split's going to be? I mean, you're making it seem like you think 80% of the public's betting on the Chiefs.
I think a lot of them will.
I think it's going to be far closer than that.
Getting points with the Chiefs, watching what the Patriots have done. Like, at some point, you have to ask, not just how good is this team, but what good teams have they beat? And you can look at the Chiefs' resume and say, well, damn, they beat Baltimore. Okay, they beat Minnesota. Those are good wins. What good wins? And here we are, 3/4 of the way into the season. What good wins does New England have? If you want to say Buffalo at home, okay, but the good teams that they've played,
that's a good
Houston.
One. That's a good one.
But if they lose to Kansas City, then you have to talk about the four best teams they've played. Buffalo, Houston, Kansas City, and Baltimore.
I've been telling you this for 4 weeks. You don't got to preach to me about this. I'm just surprised that you're so shocked that New England is basically favored because they're home. Like, I could see if the Patriots were 6.5 or 7-point favorites. It's a 3-point favorite, and they're only favorites because they're at home. If this game was in Kansas City, then Kansas City would be a 4.5-point favorite. I'm just shocked that you were so surprised that the team that has the second-best record in the NFL, who beat the same Chiefs team 2 times last season, who has the better coach, I'm shocked that you're so flabbergasted how they're a 3-point home favorite over the Chiefs here. I don't get it. I genuinely do not understand how you're so confused about this.
Because the Chiefs are a better football team. And you're the one who always tells me that it's not about history. It's not about what you did last year, anything like that. That's the reason why the line is as it is. If it wasn't the Patriots and it was just another really good football team, the line would be different. The reason the Patriots are favored is because of their winning streak at home and because of their past. The Chiefs are a better football team right now than the Patriots, and the Chiefs are going to win this game. Vegas is going to lose money. I'm telling you right now. They're going to lose money on this.
What changed your mind about the Patriots? Because last week you were on the completely different opposite end of the spectrum. And last week in your power rankings, you had the Patriots ahead of the Chiefs. I'm just curious, was it just Sunday and losing to the Texans the way they lost? Because last week you were on the opposite side with New England.
And Tom Brady looked terrible. Like, that's part of it.
He's been looking like this all season. Like, Brady yesterday was no different than he's been all season. Only four quarterbacks in the NFL are completing a lower percentage of their passes. Like, you're right. Maybe you just, like, woke up one day, just magically saw what BK
and I. Again, there's certain parties that it's okay to be late to. Burying the Patriots is one of those. Like, yes, I wish I would have seen it the way that you did, Miss Cleo and BK, and predicted the Patriots' downfall. Congratulations. You were right about that one. I was wrong.
No, I'm not even passing the credit. I'm just shocked how last week you were so pro-Patriots, and now it's like, how are they favored in this game? I'm like, what?
I don't think I was as pro-Patriots as you're making it out to be. I just didn't necessarily have them completely buried. And I still don't think they're completely buried. I just think the Chiefs right now are a better football team that should be favored. I know it doesn't sound right. I get it. It's taboo.
I'm saying is, if you got him as a home dog and losing to Buffalo, you think it's over for him. Because if you can't beat the other four best teams in the AFC in the last 6 weeks of the season, how are the Patriots turning it around? So in your thing, you got him losing to Kansas City on Sunday, which I got him losing to Kansas City too, so I'm not going to say I'm on a different side than you. But I assume right now you probably would say Buffalo's playing better than them, and Buffalo is going to beat them here in a couple weeks. I don't think they play them in 5 weeks. They play them here in 2 weeks. If you're going to lose in a six-week stretch to Houston, Baltimore, Kansas City, and Buffalo, it is over for the New England Patriots, at least this season.
Yeah, I agree. Again, it took me a while to get on the bandwagon. You guys got this one ahead of me, but you're exactly right. If Kansas City beats you, like at some point, it's not just about playing the good teams. You have to beat the good teams. And if you played Houston and played Baltimore and played Kansas City and they all beat you, how good are you?
Coming up, we are going to hand things over to the Therese Paylor Show with Brent. Oh, not today? He's off?
K-State basketball.
K-State basketball today. I apologize. But so, before we hand things off to K-State, let's go inside the mind of the machine.
Today's Cyber Monday, C-Dot. I know you've got a good deal or two, right? Got something for me?
I haven't bought anything.
Really? Did you go out on a Black Friday?
I did not.
BK, have you gotten that $7 coat from Amazon yet?
I wish I had a better story to tell you, but I don't have one.
That's okay.
I'm supposed to get that by Christmas.
Me too.
Allegedly.
I got the olive one. BK's got the brown one.
By the way, do you know when the last time was that the Patriots were favored at home by 3 points or less? Because, like, you're making it out to be, like, the Chiefs should be either favored or at least closer than
I think it should be a pick. I think it should be a pick.
It's only happened once in the last 3 years. It was against Atlanta in Week 7 in 2017. That was the last time that the Patriots at home were favored by 3 points or less. And the last time they were a pick'em was 2016.
And would you say at any time in the last 3 years the Patriots have been as vulnerable as they are right now?
No, I agree with you. I'm just saying, like, Vegas always gives them this kind of love at home because they have an unbelievable home field advantage, and it's just the Patriots. So that's why the line is where it is.
Great game tonight on Monday Night Football. See that who you got, Vikings at Seahawks.
You already know. I don't believe in Kirk Cousins. I've been telling you this the whole time. I don't believe in them. I'm picking Seattle. I think Seattle's the best team in the NFC.
That is, I think we overstate sometimes how much of a home field advantage Arrowhead is, especially at night. One of the few places in the NFL that is a huge home field advantage, especially at night, is Seattle. So give me the Seahawks.
Britney Spears turns 38 today. See that who's your all-time favorite pop singer? And do you have a favorite Britney Spears song?
I mean, I assume we're counting Michael Jackson as being the pop singer.
Do you remember?
Right?
Yeah, of course. he's the king of pop, yes.
I was just asking.
The king of
that's
pop.
That's not everybody's. I mean, if we're counting pop singer, I would say Michael first, Rihanna second.
Okay.
Beyonce count?
Sure.
Probably be up there.
Yeah, I wouldn't count. I mean, I think she's kind of R&B-ish, but I guess.
I don't know Simpson what pop count? Is anymore. Like, it's basically just top 40 songs and nobody really has more than Beyonce right now.
The line is definitely very blurred. But I would call, like, Drunken Love. I would not consider that to be a pop song. Like, I think she just has a lot of R&B songs.
Hit Me Baby One More Time is what we were looking for. Let's see. Did you see the Dolphins play that ran yesterday against the Eagles?
I did. That's the best trick play I've ever seen.
That's what I was going to ask you. Have you guys ever seen a crazier play at any level of football? If you guys don't know what I'm talking about, the punter flicked a touchdown to the kicker with the weirdest formation that you've ever seen. I've never seen anything like that.
I've never seen a trick play like that, and especially it worked, I mean, almost seamlessly. The Eagles have been the biggest disappointment in the NFL. Like, if we were giving out medals, I would say the Eagles get the gold. I would say the Cleveland Browns get the silver, and I would say the Atlanta Falcons get the bronze for disappointments this season.
Falcons definitely deserve to be on the medal stand.
Absolutely.
The Rams should be up there as well for a lot of people.
But the weird thing about the Rams is the Rams are going to finish with a winning record and just not make the playoffs. Like, they haven't lived up to the standard, but they're going to at least finish 9-7. Atlanta's going to pick 7th in the NFL draft and probably fire their coach and general manager.
The Rams are 7-5, so are the Titans, so are the Steelers. Of those two teams, which is more dangerous in the postseason, the Titans or the Steelers?
I think the Titans are more dangerous if they get in. I don't know if they're going to get in. Three of their last remaining games, they play two games against Houston, home and away, and they play New Orleans, and they travel to Oakland, which Oakland at home, still a difficult spot. I would pick Tennessee to win this week. I think Tennessee just has a tougher road down the stretch.
Sure?
I think that Pittsburgh's going to win the play.
Pittsburgh's got Buffalo at home. They travel to the Cardinals, who you said are one of the most fun bad teams in football. They could easily lose that game this week.
I agree.
And then they finish the season at the Ravens. I don't know, man. The Steelers aren't very good. We get really high and mighty on all these different teams after they come off of these three-game winning streaks. We did this with the Raiders. We're doing it right now with the Steelers. We did it previously with the Browns. This is just kind of the way that it goes with these types of teams. I think the Titans are by far the best of the group.
I think it's a little bit different with Pittsburgh. I mean, they are 7-2 since the first 3 weeks of the season. I mean, the first 3 weeks of the season, they played three of the best five teams in the NFL, New England, Seattle, and San Francisco. Since then, 7-2, and who knows what Baltimore is going to look like week 17. Baltimore might have everything clinched where they don't need to play, so it's kind of up in the air. If I had to say right now, I would probably side with Pittsburgh's last four games over Tennessee's last five games. Like, Houston's not going to be in a position in which they're going to be able to rest players the last week of the season, where I think Baltimore could be in that scenario, especially if New England drops a game or two down the stretch.
Did you guys watch the Iron Bowl on Saturday?
I did.
How great of a game was that? So Alabama lost. They're all the way down to number 9 in the latest poll. So let's say LSU beats Georgia in the SEC title game. That would put in LSU, Ohio State, Clemson, and who else? Who would be the fourth team? Would it be Georgia coming off a loss, BK? Would it be Utah? Would it be Oklahoma out of the Big 12?
I think they'd probably have to go with Utah or Oklahoma in this scenario. I think Georgia would be the one that's probably the most deserving, but that loss against South Carolina ultimately probably keeps them out. So I don't know. To answer your question correctly, there's not a good answer for the fourth best team in the country if that's the way that it goes.
Georgia has no chance of making the playoff if they lose. If they win on Saturday, then they'll be in the playoff.
And
with
so
the win
LSU.
Over LSU, with the win over Notre Dame, LSU then will make the playoff as well. Because LSU is one of the four best teams. I think Oklahoma is going to get the nod over Utah.
Yeah, if Georgia wins, that clears it up. Then Georgia gets in, LSU, yeah. Ohio State, and Clemson. That's your final four.
Yeah, but I think the intrigue in this is if Oklahoma and Utah both win their conference and Georgia doesn't win the SEC, who are you going to take between those two teams? I think the answer is going to be Oklahoma because I think we've already seen that the committee will take the name and brand recognition over potentially the better team.
While we're talking SEC football, there's a couple of teams, I don't know if you guys have heard, that are looking for a head coach. Missouri's looking for one. Ole Miss looking for one. Arkansas's looking for one. Rank those jobs in order. Which is the best job? Which is the worst?
I think Arkansas is probably slightly better than Missouri if we're not factoring in the conference or division that they play in. I think Arkansas has a better donor system. I think they support their teams better than Missouri does. I think they have a little bit better of a storied history and booster culture. I think Arkansas is better. I think Missouri is a better job than Ole Miss, and I'd rank Ole Miss as 3.
I agree with those rankings 100% from top to bottom and for the reasons.
But we're talking MU football. Drew Locke won his first game as the Broncos quarterback. What are the chances, C-Dot, that he's the long-term solution in Denver?
I'm not super high on Drew Locke as an NFL prospect, to be really honest with you about it. I think he has a lot of limitations that I'm not sure if he's going to be able to correct, especially in the coaching environment that he's going to be in. Like, I don't know if Vic Fangio is the one to get the most out of him, and with Elway's track record, so I'm going to say 15-20% chance that he's the answer. But I do think that he can stick in the NFL. Like, I think he can be someone who's in the NFL for 8 to 9 years and be a solid and plus backup for a team.
He's got a few things going for him. He's really likable. His teammates absolutely adored him at Mizzou, and it looks based on kind of the post game interviews that I saw yesterday, like his teammates really love him already out in Denver. So that's one thing he's got going for him. The other thing, he's just got a cannon of an arm. you guys see that first touchdown pass that he threw to Courtland Sutton?
Great throw.
That's the kind of thing that we saw all the time at Mizzou, and it's what made him an NFL prospect from the time when he was at least Summit. I think he's going to hang on in the NFL. I don't think he's necessarily the long-term answer in Denver.
And you said he can hoop a little bit too, right, C-Dot?
Yeah, I mean, he was a four-star recruit, and he very easily could have played Division I basketball.
You know who else can hoop? Luka Doncic, averaging 31, 10, and 10. More improved player this season. He or my guy Devontae Graham, averaging 18 and 8 this season?
I mean, they're just on two completely different kind of levels. Like, Luka Doncic might start in the All-Star game.
Could that be the MVP?
Yeah, I don't think he's going to win MVP. I think that's clearly going to be LeBron or Anthony Davis this year.
Ooh, I don't know. Luka Doncic playing awesome basketball. I mean, he's almost averaging a triple-double, and I think the Mavericks are going to finish like the fourth or the fifth seed. I think he's going to be right in the thick of it.
Thanks for listening to The Drive. Back again tomorrow.
The Drive, weekdays 2 to 6.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.